think one of the things that America has to face is the reality that it is an empire.
No, you must use it. You must use it because it make you rebel. Against what?
They were in front of Radio 8, shooting at the station.
No es un crimen defender nuestros propios derechos como pueblos indígenas.
Greetings and blessings. You're listening to the Travelogue Media Podcast. I'm Jason Claro, podcasting from Quetzaltenango, Guatemala. Thanks for joining me. On this show, I have Lauren with me in the studio, a community development worker who has traveled extensively in Central America and will share some of her experience. Stay tuned. All right. Thanks for joining the show once again. This is the Travelogue Media Podcast. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. This episode, I have joining me in the studio, and I understand this is her podcast debut. I have Lauren, and Lauren is a community development worker who's who has traveled in Nicaragua and other places in Central America and is about to share some of her experiences there. So welcome to the Travelogue Media Podcast.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for having me. So I'll just start by telling you a little bit about myself. I studied psychology and global health at Northwestern. And just a few days after graduation, I moved to Panama City, Panama, to work with a health and development nonprofit. And there, I coordinated groups of short-term volunteers who came to Panama for a few weeks to collaborate with Panamanians doing development projects in the Darien region, which borders Colombia. And after 2 years in Panama, I wanted to stay, but I applied for jobs there, didn't get any. And I had traveled to Nicaragua during my time in Panama just for vacation. And I applied for and was hired for a job in southern Nicaragua on the beach. So I lived there for a couple of years working on a community garden project. And then I moved a little bit farther north in Nicaragua to León, where I worked on microfinance and also some youth leadership trainings, which was really great. And last April 2018 was when the political unrest started in Nicaragua, and I stayed until July 15th. And basically between April and July, I decided that Nicaragua was not the place that I wanted to be because it was no longer the peaceful, lovely country that I'd been living in for 3 years. And so that is why I've been in Guatemala for the last almost year. And I hope to return to Nicaragua someday, but right now that's not yet in the cards.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get a sense of your picture, your image of Nicaragua and or Central America, like before and after, like what was your idea of Nicaragua before you got there, and like kind of talk us through how that image changed or.
Mm-hmm. So when I visited Nicaragua just for vacation, I knew it was a beautiful, fun place with nice people. But I think that when you go on vacation anywhere, that's the vibe that you get. And something that really struck me when I first moved to Nicaragua was many of my friends in the U.S. were worried. It's level 3 travel warning. My dad was freaking out. And I felt very safe in Nicaragua, especially compared to living in Panama City, where I was before, which is a huge city. And something that very much struck me when I first moved there was hitchhiking. So people in Nicaragua, hitchhiking is like a form of transportation. And the buses only run until about 6 p.m. So it's not like Guatemala where the buses run all night. And so I had many friends who would leave Managua, the capital city, to go to their hometowns after 6. And their plan was just to wait to get a ride. And they always did. And they always got home. And it was fine. So just that attitude was so pleasant. And the whole time I lived there, even during the protests when all the roads were blocked in León, and there was, so the roads were all blocked to protect the communities from the police. That's why people decided to block the roads. And so also food delivery trucks couldn't get to stores. But my neighbors still came over to say, like, we have a lot of eggs. If you need eggs, you can just come here. So Nicaraguans, in my opinion, never changed. They were always cheerful and ready to help. It was just the circumstances changed.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you can talk about more about your work there, you know, the interactions you had with Nicaraguans, some of, you know, maybe some of the conversations you had. I kind of want to get, there's sort of this, I don't know, mystique, I guess, about Nicaragua, because I don't go there. And that it didn't, I'm wondering to what extent that affected you. This was before you were there, before the recent political unrest, but even before that, there was, you know, it's had its history with Sandinistas and, you know, in the U.S. and so forth. But so what were, just talk about some of the interactions you had, some of your first interactions with Nicaraguans and some of the experience, some of the, you know, your early experiences with dealing with Nicaraguans.
Mm-hmm. So remember when I landed, this was in August 2015, I landed in Managua and my boss picked me up at the airport, which was great. And he's a Nicaraguan man, the director of the organization. And so then we had a 3-hour drive. So the first thing we did was stop to get a quesillo, which is like a giant burrito, but it's filled with cream and cheese, and you get it in a plastic bag, a tight plastic bag. And the bag is tied shut. So naturally, I tried to untie the bag and eat the quesillo. So it's like dripping all down my face. I'm trying to make a good impression on my boss. He's driving stick shift and eating his because he just made a small hole in the corner of the bag and was eating a little bit out of the bag. And so then he, of course, taught me how to do it. He tied my bag back up, and then I was able to eat the quesillo correctly. So that was my first impression of Nicaragua. It was like hard to eat stuff, but people will help you out. Mm-hmm. And then we started talking about the upcoming election where Daniel Ortega was going to run again. And I asked him his opinion, and he said that Daniel Ortega is becoming a dictator, but the dictatorship, so the word for dictatorship in Spanish is dictadura. And he said that in this case, it's a dicta buena. So like a good dictator. Because at the time, what Daniel Ortega had been doing was repaving roads, increasing healthcare, and having some better improvements in education. And I think that in general, Nicaraguans they have the war, the very long civil war, in their very recent memory. And many people who are in their 50s and 60s and 40s lost their brother, their mom, their dad. And nobody wanted to think that Daniel Ortega, who was the savior, had become what he'd overthrown. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of tolerance and this, like, yeah, he's a dictator, but he's dicta buena. Mm-hmm. So that really stood out to me. And I think that in Nicaragua, I noticed that people don't like to necessarily speak their minds unless they really have to. And I think that that goes back to the same idea of, like, don't rock the boat, because we all remember what happens when we rock the boat. And another thing that really stands out to me when I reflect on my time in Nicaragua was I bought a motorcycle after living there for about a year. So I'd never driven a motorcycle before. And I learned how to drive. That's a different story. But I had to go down and up a big hill to get to my house. And there was a time when I stalled at the bottom of the hill and I couldn't start my bike to get it up. And a random person drove by, stopped, assumed I didn't speak Spanish, didn't speak to me at all, started my bike, drove it up the hill, and like held it for me until I walked up the hill to get on my bike. A few months later, in that same exact spot, I saw a woman having the exact same problem. And I got off my bike, drove her bike up the hill, handed her back her baby. She had her baby with her. And she drove off. And that's the type of like memory that always comes back. People helping people even when there's really no reason to. It's just like, this person needs help. I can do it. So I'm going to help them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess kind of ties in, I guess, with the question I was going to ask about the, you know, the attitudes toward, I don't really like using the word American, but estadounidense, but basically like the Nicaraguans' general attitude toward Americans, estadounidenses. Did you have a pretty positive, mostly sense. Was there any time where you felt like that there was any sort of tensions or anything like that with how they regarded Americans?
I think that there was a very clear understanding that what the CIA did, what Ronald Reagan did, isn't the same as me. I didn't do that. And I do think that people from the U.S. as a whole have benefited from the actions of the U.S. government. So it's not to say that I've never benefited from the corruption and imperialism that our country has done. But I don't think Nicaraguans ever, I never felt that someone thought I had done any malicious acts towards them. I did have a few conversations with people where they said, "Do you know what your country did to my country?" And because I had read books like Blood of Brothers and The Country Under My Skin and other books about the revolution and civil war, I was able to say, yes, I don't understand how it felt to live here during the war, but I am not completely ignorant of it. I think that a tourist who goes to Nicaragua for 1 week and only talks about how it's great to buy beers for a dollar and has no understanding of why any, you know, why the economies are so different and inflation and whatever, that type of person might get a different reaction. But I never felt in danger because of my nationality. I was definitely more of a target because of the color of my skin, that I stood out. I had my phone stolen 3 different times while I lived in Nicaragua. So, but that's a different story. That's not because I'm from the U.S. That's just because I'm a tourist.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what your experience like as a woman traveling in this part of the world. And it's been, you can speak to how Nicaragua is this similar or different than the rest of Central America or where other places you've traveled, but it's been characterized as very, very patriarchal. So what was your, did your, I mean, can you speak to that about a bit? Was it, what were the attitudes of, toward women and American women in particular?
I think that in general, I've been talking about this a lot lately, actually, about Quetzaltenango is like safety for women. And people ask, is it safe? And I hear a lot of women saying like, yes, it is safe. You just need to take regular precautions. And I think that that's not true. I think that Guatemala is much less safe than Nicaragua. Here I carry pepper spray in my hand when I walk home at 7 at night. And in Nicaragua, I never even had pepper spray. I do believe that the safety in Nicaragua is probably different now after all these months of political and economic tension. My experience in general was just so much sexism all the time. And I write poems, and I wrote tons of poems about it.
You have one you want to share?
I don't have them memorized. Oh, I'll share it with you. But when I was buying my motorcycle, I asked one of my coworkers to help me decide which motorcycle to buy. And he told me, like, are you going to buy a moto de mujeres, like a women's motorcycle, which is a scooter? And I asked him, I said, what's a moto de mujeres? And I knew exactly what he meant. But I made him say it to me because there's so many men who drive scooters and there's women who drive motorcycles. And it's, there's not like a gender test before you buy the bike. But I had a friend, I offered to drive him home on my bike, and he also knows how to drive a motorcycle. And he was like making as if he was going to get on the front to drive. And I was like, I'm going to drive. This is my bike. And he didn't let me drive him home.
Wow.
And I didn't continue that friendship much longer. I didn't get into it with him. I don't know if he was embarrassed or what. So the motorcycle was a huge part of it. It brought out sexism in a lot of ways. But also the organization that I was working for has an extensive sports program only for boys. And there's one girl, Ashley, who played with the boys. And one of my main goals while working there was to try to start a girls' soccer or volleyball, I didn't care what sport, program. And we were trying to hire a Nicaraguan woman to run it. And we didn't find the right person to hire. And I think that partially that was because of the machismo within the organization, that the men, the four top people in the organization were men. And so maybe they just didn't have it in their mindset that they could find the right person. So no one seemed like the right person. But I didn't find a candidate either, a female candidate that was prepared to be like a coach. So I think that that was a big part of it. And I think that also with safety, it's very hard to judge when things are safe or not, especially when you're new. Like, for example, people would tell me in Nicaragua, like, it's unsafe for you to drive to the border at 3 in the morning. Okay, great. But they would also tell me it's unsafe to walk down the street to buy tortillas at 5 p.m. So it's really hard to tell. And I think that many tourists, when they are new to a place, just think, oh, everybody's being really paranoid. So they don't take anything into account because everything is so extreme. Or people go the other way, they believe everything, and then they never leave their hotel room. So I think that that's one of the challenges, is that for local women, there's also this attitude of like, don't leave the house alone. So people don't like dejar la casa sola. And So women are kind of trapped by that idea. So for them, maybe going to buy tortillas at 5 p.m. does feel dangerous. So they're telling their truth. And I think that's a big challenge when you're living somewhere, is to know who to ask about safety to get a real answer.
Okay. We've been talking with Lauren on the Travelog Media Podcast. We'll be right back after a very short break. If you're enjoying this podcast, you can show your support by listening on the Radio Public app on your Android or Apple device. Look for the link in the show notes for details on how to download the free Radio Public app. Or if you prefer to make a direct donation, you can visit paypal.me/JSKmedia. Your ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts are always appreciated, but even better is telling a friend about Travelog Media. Thanks for listening. Back to the show. All right, we're back with Lauren on the Travelog Media Podcast. Thanks for listening. So let's, continue this sort of thread. I want to ask about, feminism in particular in Nicaragua and in other places in Central America you've traveled. I don't know if I can speak much to it, but I mean, I know that here in Quetzaltenango, there is feminist organizing. There are organizations and things, but what's been your experience with that word in particular? For example, on Facebook, I know that there's been various campaigns against violence against women and backlash against it, people using the term feminazi to scare people away from it, that kind of thing. What can you speak about your own experience with the F word?
Yeah. I think that feminism is the F word. That's a great way to describe it. Also in the U.S., I think that in Central America, it's even more misunderstood. There's a yoga teacher here in Quetzaltenango that has a shirt that says, "Girls just want to have fundamental human rights." And I think that basically sums it up. That feminism is, of course, just the idea that everybody is equal. And that in Nicaragua, I think that doing quote unquote masculine activities can make people judge a woman as less of a woman. So put that in quotes too, as a lesbian or as someone who's not going to be able to have children. Or if you don't want to have children, that means that there's something wrong with you. So I lived with another woman we shared a house, and she also had a motorcycle. And we lived alone except with each other. And a lot of people asked me, aren't you afraid of living alone? I'm like, I don't live alone. They're like, but with another woman. I'm like, that's not alone.
Oh, right, right.
And I wasn't afraid. And we had a water tank, and sometimes it would get blocked. And so we had to climb up a ladder and check what was going on in the water tank. And a couple other normal household things like that, like using a hammer, changing a light bulb. And my landlady told me in a complimentary way that we are matcha.
Mm.
So macho is masculine. So matcha is not even a word, I don't think, because it doesn't really make sense.
Right.
And so I took that as a compliment. But I know that my actions of changing the oil on my motorcycle was extraordinary. And that I did try my best to be an example, especially to young girls. And even in everything that I do, whenever I'm teaching or when I was teaching in the community garden, using examples, in my examples, there'd be a female taxi driver and a male nurse and everything, just turning things on its head. Once in the community garden project I was working on, I had a group of preschoolers in there, which was great. And one of the three-year-old boys hit one of the three-year-old girls. And their teacher did not say, don't hit. She said, we don't hit girls. And I told the boy, we don't hit people in general. But those types of messages are being given to children so young. One of my partner's cousins is four, and he wanted to make tortillas, help his grandma make tortillas, and his mom told him not to. I think that there are some people who believe that when little boys participate in girly activities, it can make them gay, which is, when I realized that, there's a whole other conversation about homophobia in Latin America, but women are very afraid of having their sons be gay. So if they do believe that if their son makes a tortilla, that he could become gay from that, wild idea, then at least that turned on a light bulb for me of why women raise their sons to be these men who are later men who are abusing women. And in some ways, things are starting to change. In León, where I lived, there was also a feeminist group called Mujer Al en Acción. And they had the equivalent to like the vagina monologues, which was pretty crazy and amazing. And I went to two of their presentations, and they were full. And it was bold. It was just as bold as the vagina monologues were at Northwestern. And while I was living in Panama, catcalls were a big part of my life, just like they are today. And I just always took it. They didn't say anything back. But in Nicaragua, I decided to start saying things back in the day when people were around. And so I say still, que grosero, which is like how disgusting. And I've had a wide variety of reactions to que grosero. And so this is if a man whistles at me or says something. I said que grosero to one man, and he looked at me and repeated it back to himself in his head, like as if he was really trying to grasp what I had said. And that was amazing. Like, I felt like I really hit home with him. I had a different man tell me, así soy yo, mi amor, grosero, which means, that's what I am, my love, disgusting. So he took it as a compliment. So I just think that it's good to not tolerate insults on the street. But when I talk to Central American women about catcalling, which I do a lot, they say, no, you shouldn't say anything back. Just ignore them. Just keep walking. And that is kind of the same as it's dangerous to buy tortillas at 5 p.m. If we just accept insults on a daily basis, men won't learn. Is it my job to educate every single man in Central America about catcalling? No. Is it always safe for me to respond? Absolutely not. But when I can, I do. And I think that there are men who are on board with feminism. I think that they are few and far between in the whole world, but especially here. And that a lot of women are also so deeply ingrained with the ideas of machismo that they also reject feminism. So it's a battle that's just at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So unfortunately, the United States is beginning to look more like some Latin American countries in terms of its availability of abortion and women's reproductive health care. However, we are starting to see more women in political, running for political office and holding elected office. Where do you see things? Where do you see things improving? Do you think it's more likely that things will improve for women in Latin America or in the United States? Is it like, where's the trend going? Like, it's bad now, no question about it. But like, where do you see, where do you think it's most promising?
I think that in the U.S., women in most communities know in their brains that they are equal to men, if not better in many ways. Women are showing so much strength in academics and medicine and everything, and that's so great. And I think that men and women in the U.S. provide like a really healthy competition for each other. That being said, the income wage gap is a huge problem that isn't being solved despite women's success and performance. In Latin America, in Central America, where I've lived, I don't believe that women think that they are equal to men, because their brains from day one are just so inundated with the idea that they're less. And if you think that you are less than someone else, you will be, because that's your identity. So I think that in the U.S., though we are going in reverse in some ways, equality will win soon. And this presidency is like a giant test to our system in general. And in Latin America, the next step is for women to realize the truth about the fact that they're equal to men. And that's when they'll be able to fight and compete in a healthy way instead of like a oppressive struggle for air, which is what I would describe it as now.
Mm-hmm. All right. I want to play a little bit of an interview from Bernie Sanders, then Mayor Bernard Sanders, shortly after a visit to Nicaragua in 1985, and just his comments on the what was then a pretty new revolution in Nicaragua, and talk about revolution there. And just listening to this interview, It's eerie how just listening to it, there are so many things that made me think just like there's nothing has changed at all, at all. but yeah, I just wanted to play this little clip and then, you know, just tell me what you think. I mean, part of this podcast is just sort of, well, educating myself on what goes on in the world in these parts, and so I'm a little fuzzy on like the history after. I know that the Sandinistas were in power, and then it was until I think it was 1990 the opposition party won, and after that it's not as clear in my mind. But anyway, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to play this clip and have you respond.
What I learned, one of the things that I think I learned on my trip, you know, as a socialist, the word socialism does not frighten me. And I think it's probably fair to say that the Nicaraguan government is primarily a socialist government. But what you learn down there is that socialism or anti-capitalism is much less prevalent than nationalism. Basically, what they're saying is we've been under the thumb of the Marines. As you know, the Marines installed the Somoza family. We've been under the thumb of the United States for our entire modern history, and we're not going to be under the thumb of anybody anymore. Nicaragua is our country. We will do the right things or the wrong things. We will make our mistakes, but we will make them independently as an independent and free nation. That is the theme of their revolution.
Any comments, responses?
I think that in general, Nicaraguans love Nicaragua, and Nicaraguans love Sandino and the Sandinista ideals. When I was in a taxi, so just after the first like 4 days of the political unrest, I took a taxi from the airport to Esteli, where my partner was living, because I was too afraid to take the bus. And I always take the bus. And when we were pulling up to his house, there was a speed bump. And both the taxi driver and I were very afraid of the speed bump because it was new. And that was like the level of tension that we all had. And the taxi driver even asked me, like, is this speed bump usually here? And it was a very weird thing to be afraid of, but we were afraid of everything. But that taxi driver, a different day, we had a different ride, and the taxi driver told me that one of the boys who had, and by boy, I mean, I think he was 19, who was killed in Esteli, his father had been one of the Sandinista soldiers who had liberated Daniel Ortega from prison. And the taxi driver told me, basically, Daniel Ortega repaid this man by killing his son. He was killed with a sniper. And that same driver told me, like, I'm a Sandinista, and I believe in freedom and equality and not having one landowner own the entire country, but instead dividing it amongst the laborers. But I am not a Danielista. And so I think that Nicaraguans do believe in cooperativism and working together, and always together is better. In the U.S., it's like, I'm going to the grocery store, I'm going by myself, I'm going as fast as I can, going to get a great parking spot, get in, get out. In Nicaragua, everybody's going to the grocery store, whole family, it's going to be very slow, but that's good because everyone's together. The purpose is to be together. And people even talk about, like, we're going to come over for Christmas dinner or whatever to compartir, to share. But you're not actually sharing anything physical. You're going to share food, but mostly you're just going to share time. And I think that, like what Bernie says about not being afraid of the word socialism, I think that socialism in theory is just sharing, and sharing in theory is great. And what ruins socialism is human ego and also the interference of other countries. But that Nicaraguans on a small scale really live those beliefs of there's enough. There's always enough food for everybody, and there's always enough space for everybody to sleep. Even if everybody's sleeping on the floor, at least we're all together, so it's good. And that attitude was what stood out to me. I think it goes back to the same thing I was mentioning about hitchhiking. It's like, if I have space in the back of my truck, there's no reason for me to not give you a ride because you are a person. And so that's socialism in practice, in a human-to-human form, not necessarily in a political form. So yes, I do think Nicaraguans live that value, and that many of them wouldn't be able to give you a definition of socialism, but they're living it in their houses.
I don't know how much you feel comfortable speaking about the events of last year, that were the unrest where people were killed. My idea of this is I've tried to find some articles and read some things, but I really just haven't found much that, I mean, so I don't know what you want to, if you, how much you feel comfortable talking about it, and please share whatever you.
Sure. So on April 16th, or right around April 16th, the Ortega government announced a Social Security change. So essentially, retired people, so grandma and grandpa, were going to receive less in their Social Security benefit money each month. And people who work and pay into Social Security were going to have to pay more. So people did the math and realized that that wasn't fair. And so grandma and grandpa started protesting on April 17th. And there was a violent reaction from what's called the Sandinista Juventud, the Juventud Sandinista, so the youth, against senior citizens who were protesting. And a video that I always mention because it really stands out in my mind is a woman who has white hair, she's older, and her head is bloody from being beaten by one of these Sandinista youth. And so on April 18th, I was going to Managua to pick up a group of volunteers, bad timing, and I was in a bus to the terminal, and then I was going to take a taxi from the terminal to the airport to get the group. And the bus driver said, I'm only taking you guys here. And we were like three blocks from the terminal. So I thought just like, okay, weird traffic. I don't know. He doesn't feel like it. So I get out of the bus and I see on the corner a huge group of college-age students with signs against the Social Security change. And on the roads are what's called adoquinado. It's like those bricks that are hexagonal. And in the Civil War, the Sandinistas and the Contras used these bricks. They pulled them up out of the street, kind of like French Revolution style, to make barricades. In some of these college student hands are the adoquinados and rocks, other things. So I'm walking literally right across the street from them because that's where I need to get a taxi. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm having flashbacks from like all these books that I've read, like what is going to happen right now? So naturally going to a restaurant to get a juice. And then I see what I found out later are called antimotines, which means riot police, running towards this protest. And from there, I got in a taxi and left the area. So that was the first day that people were killed by police. And over the next few days, maybe 20 protesters and police were killed. Police have been killed during this whole process as well. And my volunteers went home early, needless to say. But between April, May, and June, there were lots of protests. So on April 21st, the Monday following April 18th, which was a Thursday, so April 22nd, I was in Esteli and I participated in one of the marches. There was probably about 10,000 people and it was incredible. It felt like this is democracy. Everyone's protesting or marching peacefully. And of course, Daniel Ortega is going to listen to his pueblo and change his mind or step down or something. And that didn't happen. and the protests regularly were ending in clashes with the police, ending in deaths. And every morning when I would wake up and look at my phone, it was like to see the number of deaths from the night before. And on Mother's Day, there was a Mother's Day march. And I didn't participate in any other marches after that. It's also illegal for foreigners to like intervene. So there was many reasons not to participate, but we did go watch. And so during the Mother's Day march, I was watching the march, and some of the Sandinista youth on motorcycles did like donuts around the front of the marchers who were carrying pictures of people who had been killed. So kind of like in honor of them. And it was just like a scare tactic, but it totally worked. It was very frightening. And many people were killed on the day of the Mother's March from snipers in Managua. So it's not self-defense when it's a sniper. And the police are not just reacting to rowdy protesters when multiple people who were killed are under 17. You know, they're children. They're not a threat to a riot police person with a bulletproof shield. And when it's hard to even explain. But so at the end of May and beginning of June, there was a national day of protest. So basically León, the city where I was living on a Tuesday, decided to have a paro. So that basically means to stop all economic activity so that no taxes are going into the government's pocket. And so every store was closed. There was a woman who sold papaya off of a basket on her head every single day. Every single day except that day. And I heard her yelling papaya every single day. And so even she was protesting. but when the barricades were going up, I went to one of my neighbor's houses, and she's like 80. So she lived through the war. And she told us, like, do you have barricades on your street? You need to make them to protect yourselves from the police. So there was, and probably still is, a real fear. But now, fast forward more than a year later, protesting is illegal unless you have permission from the police. And that's a new law, of course. And so people can't protest. They do ask for permission from the police, but it's always rejected, of course. And so I think that there's this attitude now that Nicaragua is calming down and people are, some tourism is starting to go back, but it's just because people are scared. But the people, the 8,000 people that were protesting on April 22nd still feel the way they felt then, but they just don't know what to do because they can't protest. And the next election is still a few years off. But going out to march and maybe get killed is also not a good solution. So to me, between April 17th and today, nothing is fixed and nothing has gotten better. Violence has gone down because people have closed their doors because they don't know what else to do.
Okay. All right. So a couple of questions to wrap up. One is, would you return to Nicaragua under certain circumstances, and what would those be? And also, what advice would you give to I guess anyone who is interested in traveling to Nicaragua?
So I am actually going to Nicaragua for 2 weeks in June to visit my partner's family with him before we move to the U.S. My advice to myself is to stay out of big cities and to not participate, of course, in any political activity. I'm pretty torn in general about tourists going to Nicaragua because in some ways I want them to go so much because so many of my friends work in tourism and so many businesses are closed or closing. But also I think that that normalizes something that's not normal. But then I think about Guatemala, where Guatemala has so much gang activity and is arguably much more dangerous than Nicaragua and has a lot of corruption. And yet there's tons of tourism here and many individuals and small businesses benefit from that. So I don't think like all tourists should leave Guatemala because it's corrupt. But I don't think it should be taken lightly. And I do feel frustrated when I hear people say like, oh yeah, Nicaragua had a problem last year, but now it's fine. It's like, yeah, now it's fine in the sense that you're not going to get like, I don't know, in between a fight with a policeman and a protester on the street. So in that sense, it's fine, but it's not fine. And I do want the economy, obviously, to pick back up so people can do what they need to do. So I think if people are fired up about going to Nicaragua to surf or to hike the volcanoes or go to the coffee farms, that they should, but that they should educate themselves and recognize that things are not solved, but they can be still part of the, they can still bring economic activity to the country, which is great. But they shouldn't just ignore and think like, oh, this is the beautiful empty beach. No one's on these waves. It's like, yeah, but why? You know, 2 years ago, that lineup was packed with millions of surfers. And now it's not. So that's nice for you as that one surfer. But it's not just a random thing. I think it's important to understand what you're walking into.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other, I don't know, just quick resources that you could point people to find out, you know, good sources of information about current things happening there, websites or news outlets or...
Yeah, there's... So there's a couple different newspapers, La Prensa, El Nuevo Diario, which are two different Nicaraguan newspapers. There's also a lot of different Facebook groups called Movimiento 18 de Abril. So it's like the movement of the 18th of April. So movement of the 18th of April, León, movement of the 18th of April, Managua, etc. And those are politically active groups, but also to that would be updated with things that are going on in the country. And I think that another good way to know is the expats Facebook groups also. So expats in León, expats in Managua, to get a better feel versus when you sign up for like the embassy website, it tells you just don't go to Nicaragua. So if you're going to go, get some information from real source first.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We've been speaking with Lauren on the Travelog Media podcast. Thank you so much for joining. Thanks for listening to the Travelog Media podcast. You can find Travelog Media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all that stuff. Please do me a big favor and download the Radio Public app so I can get a couple of bucks here and there. And that's going to do it for this episode. Que toda sea amor. Walk tall, live free.